Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Heather Chantos, all the way in from Montana.
Yeah, hi.
And a crazy, crazy cab drive in Brooklyn. But we're here, we're relaxed, we're in the AC, it's beautiful.
Yes.
Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Michelle Michaels of Elephant Props is the one that told me about the illustrious Heather Chantos.
She's very kind.
You must have her on the show.
Yeah.
And I said, what does she do? She's like, I know, but I don't know a little bit of everything.
That's possibly true, yeah.
How do you define yourself? What do you do?
You know, I get asked that a lot in Montana, and it's really hard to explain. My boyfriend says, just tell them you're an artist.
Yeah.
Just say that rather than trying to explain everything that you do. I guess I am an artist, first and foremost a painter, but then I've been working with food for 15 years, starting out in London. I started out the Telegraph in London many years ago, and I was just finishing college. So I worked as a food stylist, a prop stylist, a set designer, sometimes a wardrobe stylist, and now I'm working a lot as an art director and designing.
Yeah, so you set the scene. You know, there's mise en place, there's mise en scene.
Yeah.
You're actually supplying the props for what we see.
I design the props and I set the props for the shots.
London, is that your place of birth?
No, it's not. I was born in upstate New York. Well, I say upstate and everybody should laugh at that.
Is it Westchester?
No, it's not Westchester.
Okay.
Everyone always says Westchester. No, Putnam County, county further north.
Yeah.
So it's almost upstate. It's Carmel, New York.
I know it, yes.
Yeah, so I was born there. It's a very small town. And I moved to Europe when I was about 15. So,
gotcha. Yeah,
I wasn't born in Europe, but I'd like to consider myself somewhat, at least half of my life from there.
Well, you should be taking all of August off then, right?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So, being in Europe, being in London, did you study the arts?
I did. I went to school for art history and chemistry to conserve paintings. And halfway through my first year, I wanted to study to become a painter. And I very vividly remember standing in a red telephone booth in London, calling my dad and saying I wanted to change courses. And in London, when you go to school, it's like going to school for like graduate school. And you, if you change your course, you start all over again. It's not liberal arts. You can't just change what you're studying from month to month. So I would have to start from scratch and pay a new tuition and what have you. So he laughed very loud when I told him that I wanted to become a painter and said, you're out of your mind. So I proceeded with art history for another year and didn't quite finish.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got a job with a furniture designer in London called Tom Dixon, and that was the end of that.
Well, I mean, furniture design is something that's fascinating because it's that simple construction, simple forms, but it's much more complex than it looks.
It is very complex. Tom Dixon is kind of he's a remarkable designer. He designs in a very roundabout sort of way. It's not really all furniture. He's very, I wouldn't even really know how to describe it. I mean, he really does have a very sort of Renaissance way of looking at how he designs everything for the home. I mean, his lighting is incredible. And historically, I think he must be in just about every design museum around the world. And I got to see a lot of amazing things come to fruition with him and watched a lot of young designers that came in to study with him. At the time, I was really only doing sort of PR and helping him promote the design work, but I got to see a lot of stuff happening, a lot of action as far as design was going. So, yeah. And it was a really interesting time in London to have furniture design growing. There's a section, I'm not even going to be able to remember it now. I think it's called Westbourne Grove, which is a big area in London near Notting Hill Gate, and it exploded that year with furniture design, and we got to hang out with Philippe Starck and all the designers from Capellini, and it was really quite something. And we went to Paris for the opening of Colette.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Yeah, Tom was there with his Jack Lights, which was that amazing plastic sort of light that was modeled after Jack's, you know, the kids' toys.
Oh, yeah.
And they would light up from the inside. And so we went to Colette, and they were all over the place. It was pitch black, and it was just all these floors full of Jack Lights. It was really amazing. It was an amazing time to be a part of that whole scene.
So, I mean, talk about setting the table for all that you do now. I mean, like, having that basis in furniture. How did you take that and start translating it into food or into...
I don't know. I guess food's always been sort of a big part of my my existence. Well, I guess my mother is an amazing baker. She always was quite good with the brownies. She sort of looked up to Martha Stewart. It was very funny. We grew up with Martha Stewart in our face all the time. And when I moved to Spain when I was 15 on a foreign exchange program, or sort of study abroad program, and I ended up in a family in Barcelona that was quite incredible. They were all artists and designers. And my sort of fake mother, Montserrat, was the most amazing cook. And she taught me all about how to buy fish and vegetables at the market. And it was a completely different experience from growing up in Putnam County, New York. And she really sort of instilled a great sense of how to buy food and how to cook food. And from there, I think that basis was always there. And the fact that, you know, sitting down to meal was a whole different experience with them in Spain, because the whole family would come every Sunday, and we would go to the market every Saturday morning and cook all day long into the next day, and then feed 50 people every Sunday afternoon without fail. Everyone would show up. And that sort of basis for having meals and then sort of forming a structure around it to make it look interesting and good was always something that was just there. I think even when I was in college, at one point I remember going out to the dumpster behind the house and finding a couple 4x8 sheets of plywood and making a really huge table because I didn't have one at the time, and setting it on apple crates, which are a very fixed object in my life. It's even still today, lots of apple crates everywhere. And we made this huge table and had a fake Thanksgiving dinner for all of my friends in London that, you know, had never even had a Thanksgiving because they didn't celebrate it there. And, you know, even as early as that, and just sort of setting some sort of great stage for the meal. I think everything that I was sort of watching and learning, I just took and incorporated into what is, you know, my favorite thing to do with my family, is to have meals and have friends over and cook for everyone. So I guess I just tried to incorporate it, and luckily people hire me to do it sometimes.
It's always good to get those to fuse things together.
Yeah.
But crafting and being crafty, as it seems, making tables off of apple crates and 2x4s, you started experimenting with different mediums, paintings, with dipping things in paint.
Yes.
Explain all these different things that you did.
It's very funny. I've become very famous for dipping things in paint. I don't really know how
everyone
that
knows
happened.
You as the paint dipper.
Yeah, I am the paint dipper. Actually, very recently, actually last week, we had a shoot at my house, which John Koenig, who you know, came out and photographed myself and my boyfriend. He's a chef, Chip Bales. And we had a shoot for Martha Stewart. And they said they were going to call the entire shoot dipshit because every other shot was like me dipping shit in paint. You know, I guess the painting was always there. It wasn't something that I was egged on to do. I always very much liked doing it. And I think as I started to watch all these other creative people making whatever it is they were making, I slowly became aware of what I wanted to do, which was paint really huge abstract paintings. And then I had children and started illustrating, and then went back to painting, and it's sort of been a back and forth relationship with making things. And through prop styling and set designing, I've been able to create some great stuff for shoots. It used to be a lot more creative. I used to be able to make a lot more interesting objects and sets for these sorts of things. Not so much anymore. It's become extremely commercial.
Yeah.
Which is why I started doing my own thing, which is why I moved to Montana and decided to sort of not necessarily throw in the towel on set design, but be a little more selective and try to make my own style.
Because from painting on bowls, plates, walls of chairs stacked 12 feet high,
yes,
refinished jackets and chairs from torn rags, dipping glass jars, forks and spoons, also dipped again in thick coats of paint.
There's a theme here, yeah.
Hanging torn lampshades from trees in airfield for a fashion story.
Yes.
I mean,
that was fun.
You don't get to do that anymore? You're not...
Not really. Yeah. I mean, this shoot that I did last week, which was... We were really fortunate. John had spoken to one of the editors at Martha Stewart and suggested they'd come out and do a story, because we live on a 120-acre farm in Montana, and it's quite beautiful. There's 8 outbuildings. They're all different barns that are all a very light shade of pink, which is mine and my daughter's favorite color. So it's really quite a magical spot. He suggested that we do this shoot, and when he came out, it was so great because the editors were just very in support of us doing our own thing. And I was thinking while we were shooting, you know, God, I haven't really worked this way in a really long time. Hanging lampshades from trees in airfields, you know, those were the days. I mean, that wasn't that long ago, but it doesn't seem to happen in the same way anymore. I was the art director for Corinne Day, the fashion photographer in London who passed away last year. We were very fortunate to work for British Vogue and Italian Vogue and L'Uomo and all these great, great, great fashion publications. And we would do the most incredibly insane things.
Yeah.
And it's really funny, actually, because now 3 of the barns look like sets that I had actually built many years ago for Italian Vogue, with this like torn wallpaper and floors with crazy ripped up boards. And it's rather dangerous and sort of disgusting looking at times, but really sort of beautiful. It's kind of a beautiful mess. So yeah, it just doesn't happen that way anymore. I think the publishing industry has changed a lot, and there is a huge focus on food, which I think is amazing. I'm very happy that to be a part of it, but it's not necessarily always in the most creative way, well, as far as the mainstream publications.
Yeah. Well, go. I mean, yeah, it's in. Well, coming from an art history background,
yeah,
it sounds like what you're explaining is more surrealist than realist.
Yeah,
and, you know,
the fantasy world of it.
From farm to table and everything that's happening in the food world, everyone wants to see it in their, you know, a real environment.
Right.
So that fanciful.
You right. Know. Well, which is where I think, you know, I think there's room for both. I think that the farm to table sort of movement is amazing, and I'm very much happy to support it. And I'm doing it at home all the time. But I do think that there's still something nice about, like, when we used to shoot for Gourmet, we would be given almost scripts or given a concept.
Like mood boards.
Yeah, they would literally give us a sheet of paper and they would say, okay, so this is the deal. We're going to go to a lighthouse. And there's a 75-year-old woman that lives in the lighthouse that used to be a huge fashion designer in New York City. And she left it all behind and moved to this lighthouse by herself. And she's going to have a dinner party with all of her friends coming from New York City to this like remote place in Connecticut. And so we would go on location to this lighthouse. And I would basically have to create this story around a menu that was given to me. I was given that and a menu. And it was this huge sort of fantasy world of creating a set where people could enjoy this amazing meal with, you know, fake friends and family, but was totally living in a fantasy bubble, but was something really beautiful about it because you could do really creative things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, projecting a story like that, that was unrealistic in that sense.
Yes.
How did that make you feel as an artist? Like showing a scene that had to be dressed up that didn't actually happen in real life?
It was, I thought it was really great. It was the same sort of mental process as making a painting or making a drawing. You sort of break it down into almost sort of graphic shapes, you know, the color of the bowl to match with the ceviche that's going to go in it. And I mean, I know this sounds kind of ridiculous, but there's something, food is really beautiful, and to be able to support it and make it even more beautiful and spectacular by creating sort of fantasy world around it is, I think, is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's not just a white plate and lemons
no,
anymore.
No, who wants a white plate with lemons? I mean, it's just so boring. I think there's, you know, and I mean, I think there's so many restaurants that have taken that on board too and have done some really interesting things, you know, where you can all sit together at the table even though you don't know each other, and that sort of sense of community and sort of getting together and just sharing something that's really, really beautiful is nice.
Listen, well, we're going to take a quick break and talk about your move to Montana.
Oh, God. Okay.
What is that, Big Sky State? Yeah.
Yes, Big Sky, Montana. Yeah, I think it's Big Sky State.
Excellent. Well, we'll be right back. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Heather Chantos, Lady of Montana. So, you know, moving from this very creative urban environment that is New York and, you know, priorly London, why Montana?
That's kind of a long story. But, you know, I went to Montana when I was 12 or 13 to visit an uncle, and I went to Missoula. And it's really beautiful, but back then actually it was quite different. They have a paper mill there, and so it was kind of gray and yucky, and you could barely see the mountains. It didn't feel the way that it does now. I actually moved there out of a relationship sort of that I had made in New York, and then moved to Missoula about 2.5 years ago, but that didn't work out, and so moved back to New York. Thinking that I should come back, because I had continuously been flying back and forth, as I still do, from Missoula. And we came back to New York, my two daughters and myself, and to our loft in Brooklyn. And they turned around to me after being there for a week and said, "We really hate it here. Can we please go back?" And so I said, "Yeah, you know, I actually hate it here too," which I don't hate New York, but living here with two kids, it's kind of tricky sometimes. And Montana was quite spectacular. So we turned around and moved back, and the guy at the moving company thought I was completely insane, and shipped everything back to Montana. But we moved to Bozeman, just outside of Bozeman, closer to a town called Belgrade. And we are in a valley that is just surrounded 360 degrees by mountains.
Yeah. Sounds pretty serene.
It's pretty amazing. It's a very special and unique spot, and it was a total fluke that we ended up there because we were meant to live in a Victorian house in downtown Bozeman that got sold the week before we were supposed to move there. So we ended up in this crazy house with lots of barns.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a dream come true, actually.
Yeah, it's good to have that kind of space.
Yeah.
Because it also gives you mental space to be able to...
It does.
You know, store and create.
It does. I have a dinner party barn. I have a studio. I literally have a dinner party barn. I have a studio workshop that's huge and I can make a huge mess in. And there's a tractor shed and a grain silo and a cow shed and a chicken coop. And it's really... it's so funny trying to explain it to people here that I work with, and having them out last week to do this shoot was so nice to collide the two worlds together and sort of see how it would mix. And everybody, I think everyone wants to move to Montana now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is this the basis for Milk Farm Road?
Milk Farm Road did start in Montana. It started in Missoula. I've always wanted to sort of create something that sort of spoke more of my aesthetic. Not always just in a sort of abstract sense for creating paintings or illustrations, but for creating things that are utilitarian. So I've sort of been thinking about it for years and years and years, and trying to find the time to develop it was tricky. And I mean, as I say that, it's still very much developing. I'm trying to sort of figure out exactly where it's all going to go. And every time I create a new collection or do something, a workshop or a dinner, it changes, it evolves into something else. So yeah, it's a great foundation. It's a great place to be able to sort of sit back and think about the ways I want to grow this thing and make it into what I want it to be.
So right now, Milk Farm Road is kind of a design / dinner event, something based around both art and food. And it features handmade and vintage items, which you also synchronize with sales online.
Yes, I do the sales online at the same time as an event, usually. The next, well, I'm going to do one in September in Montana again. And then actually in November, I have been talking to this woman in Argentina, in Buenos Aires. And she is an architect and has built some incredible houses and is interested in me coming to do something there. So I've been thinking that it would be really nice to start doing this on an international level. I would love to go and do something in, say, Portland and Seattle, and find different locations and sort of special, unique spaces to do it in. But I'm thinking, hey, we should go to like the rest of South America.
Yeah.
Why don't we go big first and go somewhere else? But it sort of morphs every time. It's not, and sometimes there really isn't an actual event that goes along with it. It's just something that I am inspired by a particular thing that I see if I'm traveling, and I create a collection of sorts based on that. So it changes all the time, but yeah, I'm trying to make it based on an actual event, like the Blue Dinner in Brooklyn.
Yeah. What was the first the Blue one. Dinner?
Well, the Blue Dinner actually, again, Michelle Michael, who is one of my favorite people in the whole world and is an incredible, incredible artist. She created all these beautiful ceramics for me for this dinner. And we traded. I gave her a huge painting, and she may be the one single person that owns the most of my artwork besides myself. I made her a big painting, and I made her more paintings, and she made me more ceramics.
Maybe that's why she had to move out of town for more space.
I think she did. She said she's in her... I talked to her the other day, and she's in Maine, and she's in her space, and she says she's surrounded by my artwork, which makes her very happy. So I said, well, that's good. I eat off of your plates every night. So, she made these ceramics, and they were blue, because that's her big favorite amazing color. And so I decided to do a blue dinner, and it was February, so blue seemed very appropriate in this abstract theme of the dinner. And we made the whole menu. I designed the menu, and it was all food that was more or less blue. and I made everything myself except for one chef, Matthew Weingarten. He created it. He came and he created a dish. It's blue trout, which was just amazing. He had a blue emu egg that was cracked open with the sauce in it, and it was so beautiful. I just finished doing his cookbook, so he came over. He's my neighbor in Brooklyn, and he came over for that with his wife, and everybody brought something blue or in some sort of sense was sort of reminiscent of blue. And it was really cool. It was really fun. And everybody sat down at the table, and I had art utensils out for everyone in little jars, and there were paints and whatever all over the place. And the table was really just a plywood blank canvas. They had a couple glasses of wine and went wild.
So is this thematic, though, of your event that you're trying to allow people to create as well?
I really love to see what happens when you let people doodle a little bit, when they get comfortable in their little space. And
Well, it's like being a kid in a diner with crayons.
Yeah. It is. And it's like, it's okay to draw on the table. Yeah. It's totally fine. So I did that first to sort of see what would happen. And it was magnificent. I am very, very proud to own that painting in my house and in Montana. I love it. It's one of my favorite pieces.
Well, I love that you've broken down those walls of the formality of dining, no elbows on the table and, eat from the inside out as far as silverware goes. And
oh man, there were people carving holes in the table because I made short ribs and with this blueberry, cassis lambic sauce. And it was so good. The bones were left over from the ribs. And actually, it was Michelle's husband. He's going to kill me for telling this, but he carved holes in the top of the table and took the bones and stuck them in the holes and then sealed them in with wax from the candles on the table. And when I woke up the next morning, I was looking at this thing. And I was like, oh my God, this is insane. It was just, there were like bones glued to the table with wax all over the place or sticking out of giant holes. It was very funny. Yeah, so that's the thing now, is to try to have these dinners revolve around a space where people can actually create something. And I would love to do a series and have a big exhibition at the end of all the different paintings.
Yeah.
It would be so fun.
I don't know. You always think of a dinner, obviously there are leftovers you can take away or dishes you can clear, but there isn't something substantive, that...
Yeah.
You've actually made during the
day. Yeah, you've gotten together.
Deconstruction. Yeah. It's always digesting.
Exactly. Well, I did have to deconstruct some of the bones from the painting because it was a little scary.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, to have something that's sort of confirmed and solid from after everyone's gotten together. And quite honestly, I think there were maybe three or four of us that knew each other, all had sort of worked together or known each other previously, but the rest of them didn't. And everybody got along so great. And we had... Jonah from Sawkill, who's an amazing, amazing furniture designer and a very dear friend. And we had a musician. We had a banker. We had who did the playlist for the, which was very funny. He's like, I don't know what to contribute here. And he made this awesome playlist with all this great music and sort of around the theme of blue. And another friend of mine is a painter, made all these little paintings. And, it was just everybody contributed something, and it was really great. It was really fun to sort of see how everyone would contribute something.
Yeah.
And then the final product, obviously, it was just awesome.
So what are the themes of your upcoming ones?
Well, so the one I want to do in Argentina is arts and letters. I am very keen on Letraset, and I love...
What is Letraset?
Letraset, that's so funny.
Yeah.
I think you just made me feel really old. Letraset is this amazing, the rubdown letters that you used to get way back before we had computers, and they would do, typesetting.
Yeah.
And you can't get them anymore. They don't make them, but they sell them a lot of the time in sort of, art stores, and they're considered vintage at this point. And they have these great sheets of Helvetica letters in all different sizes, in black and red and gold. And so when I was illustrating in London, I would very often use them in the illustrations. And so I thought it would be so great to get my stash out and do an arts and letters dinner and have everyone bring something that was reflective of like a letter or, whether it be a word or an actual letter that they had written or been given, and have typewriters on the table with paper and people can type things and sort of use it and make a collage collage, I guess, of sorts to, on yeah. on the actual table.
It's just great hearing of Lettresed and, you know, techniques that yeah. are applied to arts that seem and sound so similar to cooking,
yeah,
to food.
It's so, all by hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, have you ever figured out an art technique that works great for food or a food technique that works great for art?
Well, other than dipping, I think dipping's the closest one. I think, well, it's funny. So I have all these great friends who I think you've spoken to a lot of them that are all amazing food stylists. And, you know, at first I would have them over for dinner and I'd be so nervous because it's like cooking for a chef. You know, I think the first time I cooked for my boyfriend, I was just terrified that I was going to mess something up because he's such a good chef. And so they would come in and they'd stand around in the kitchen and we'd be hanging out while I was cooking and getting dinner ready. And they're just like, yeah, you just cook the same way as you make stuff. You just kind of throw it all down and like make it all work together. And maybe some people might not take that as a compliment, but I do. And so I guess, I don't know if there's anything specific, but I think I probably handle all of it in the same way, I guess. It's just sort of understanding food, understanding ingredients and how things work together and what looks great together, and then understanding art and the different shapes and forms that construct it to make it work. Which I don't always succeed at, obviously. Nobody,
you give the attempt.
I definitely try.
Yeah.
I think it all sort of plays hand in hand with each other.
Yeah.
I find.
And I mean, seeing another amalgamation are these new kitchen drawings that you've been doing.
Yeah, I love doing these kitchen drawings. And everybody else seems to really like them too, which makes me eternally happy. Yeah.
So what are they? Just based off the utensils, based off the shades, colors?
Yeah. Mostly the utensils, pots and pans, buckets. I love drawing. I love spoons. I think I have some sort of weird spoon fixation. I definitely know I have a chair fixation. I spent a good 3 years painting chairs on huge canvases, just giant, giant chairs. I think it was literally for 3 years. I painted nothing else. So I think I get fixated on objects. But there's something just really nice about the graphic shapes, like a coffee pot or a milk carton. And when I'm drawing it in a sort of loose fashion, I love the way it looks.
Well, I mean, there's a beauty in something utilitarian being taken for granted.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I look like eggs. I could draw eggs for hours.
I have a set of prints from the early 1900s of, different speckled eggs from different birds.
Totally. Well, I'm waiting for our freaking chickens to lay some eggs so that I can start drawing them from real still life. That would be nice.
Now you're just painting chickens being like, lay this goddamn thing.
Too intricate. I'm just like, please. Yeah, we're hoping. Trying to start a real farm. Now we're just fake farm.
What are you trying to do with that farm?
Well, we did have a lot of chickens that were getting to the point of laying eggs, and then we had a chicken massacre, which was not fun.
Yeah.
And so then we got new ones, and we have ducks, but we do have chickens and ducks and turkeys. And the chickens are for laying eggs, and the ducks, I hope my children aren't listening, are probably for eating. And
for having over for dinner,
over for dinner. Yeah. And the turkeys are probably not going to be big enough in time for this Thanksgiving, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. But there's, we have pheasants everywhere there. And
see, when you were explaining all that, in my head, now I've constructed a scene for you. I saw Animal Farm, the Orwell book.
Yeah.
And you're doing a big communist red dinner with all these farm animals about.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's how
that sounds that cool.
Creativity works, I guess, in a sense. Yeah. Like, you get this idea and you just run with it.
Yeah, totally. I wouldn't consider myself much of a farmer. I have a really great vegetable garden that we got started this year, and I can't believe it, but we have like 6 watermelons growing in Montana, which I think is pretty much unheard of. But it's been so, so hot this summer. So it's nice to sort of play with it. And this is our first summer and our first year actually properly having a space like this to do it in. So I think it's going to be a learning process for sure.
Well, I will keep Milk Road Farm on my calendar
thank
on tap.
You.
Looking forward to seeing what else you're doing. Check out heatherchontos.com. That's Chontos. nailed that, right?
You got it.
Yeah. And then it is milkfarmroad.com.
Yes.
And, you know, catch her in Montana, Argentina, or maybe we'll woo you back to Brooklyn for another event.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Heather, thank you for being
Thanks,
on.
Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. Hope to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.